Hello, everybody, and welcome to the December 2nd, 2015 episode of Weekly Manga Recap. I'm Y-Rod here alongside Rolo T. How's it doing, man? What's going on?
How's it doing? Did you combine two things?
I guess I was trying to say, well, how's it doing? And then I'm just going to slurred it together.
Or maybe. You're inventing a new version of
slang. Wow's it that, doing?
Yeah, you're like, how, wow's it doing, guys? And that's when all the kids are like, oh my god, Nick's so cool. He talks about all the wacky things that we can't. He's the voice of our generation.
You put on my sunglasses and flip my hat backwards, do an air guitar solo, and then kickflip on my skateboard and faceplant because I don't know how to ride a skateboard.
It was like you were such a perfect 90s cool kid there for a moment. You had to get like a varsity jacket with like a polo shirt underneath. You've been great. You've been at it all the way through. I had a thought earlier today, and I realized it's not going to be a popular one.
Okay.
I realize not a lot of people like Cyclops in the X-Men.
I think that he is underrated.
A lot of people think he's like the douchiest. And I understand a lot of that's because of his actions, which his point really isn't about. But I really had to struggle with thinking. I was like, he probably has the best mutant power, though.
He's got eye beams.
In the sense that it's what a mutant power should be, which is like an uncontrollable, like awesome power
Murder
that's
you
also
death.
A deficiency. Because yeah. It's reached the point, I think, where a lot of mutants are like, these guys are kind of awesome. Like, why do people have problems with these, like, with mutants?
It's like, I would love to be Wolverine. Sure, I would be, you know, a stumpy, hairy Canadian, but I would be immortal.
Yeah, like, why would somebody be like...
And he gets to bang so many women. Wolverine has had so many goddamn lovers, and which, you know, it pays to, you know, have eternal life, I guess.
And yeah, I mean, that kind of... When he's literally existed since at least... I think some iterations have him back as far as the Civil War, at least.
I think it was around the... I think it was around the turn of the century, that I guess, that is, I believe... And technically speaking, I don't believe it's actually canonically known how old exactly he is. I think that it's supposed... I think that that awful movie where, you know, he and Sabretooth, you know, run off together, I believe that that is
like
actually... Yeah, I believe that that is actually roughly how old he's supposed to be, like, you know, 100 or so years. But I don't know for sure. So, yeah, he's been around for a very long time, and he's the favorite Marvel X-Man because he's the one who gets jammed in all the crossovers and stuff. And he has super awesome razor sharp claws. Literally, like, all he has to do is, like, avoid Magneto and he's fine otherwise. Like, he can do whatever the fuck he wants. He's like, oh no, mutant kind, you know, everyone hates them. So, yeah, but he's Wolverine. Yeah.
But I just, like, because I've been thinking about it, I was like, how does... Because there's supposed to be, like, a racial bias against mutants.
Right, which makes no sense.
They're dangerous. But you're like, so many mutants have perfectly controlled powers, like, and really unoffensive powers, too. Like, Wolverine, like, oh my god, he has claws. Not even technically his mutant power. People were still like, freak, monster! But then, like, the Fantastic Four praised as heroes.
Right, that's something that people have pointed out, is like, because they exist in the Marvel Universe. And it's actually kind of a good thing, in a way, that the Marvel Cinematic Universe doesn't have to deal with that, because they don't own the rights to X-Men. They don't have to, you know, be like, oh, yeah, you know, Thor, I love Thor, he's so awesome and stuff. I hate that Storm, though. She does all the same things, but she's a mutant instead of a god, so fuck her.
Fuck that person. I mean, they're kind of going to run into the same problem, though, because Marvel's just going to make the Inhumans their mutants. They already have, through the show.
Right.
But they kind of have a good angle to work with because superheroes are new to this world.
Right.
So you can at least understand, like, as they crop up from everyday citizens, people would be afraid. But by the time you get to, like, Phase 4, you really kind of have to work that backwards a little bit and can't still have people being like, get out of here, you damn muties / inhumanies!
Yeah.
It's like, there's, like, 1,000 of us, and I'm stronger than Captain America. Why do you hate me?
It's kind of odd that...
I mowed your lawn last week, Fred. You're a dick.
It is kind of odd that the two groups that most contradict each other, you know, the glorified Fantastic Four and the hated X-Men, are both owned by Fox, and they're like the only properties from there that they own.
Yeah.
That's weird.
It's a bummer. Also, all the good fucking villains in Marvel. It seriously bums me out to think about how many great Marvel villains are stuck in that deal.
Yeah, Magneto, Doctor Doom,
Galactus.
Kang
the Conqueror, Annihilus.
They sure did a fuck ton with Galactus, didn't they?
Yeah, he was really
that big ball of energy. Yeah. Mm.
Yeah, Mole Man. All the great Marvel villains are over there.
Anyway, I guess we should talk about manga.
Yeah, I suppose.
Comics. Next week, you're going to have Siren. And by the way, in case you didn't catch the Q&A episode last night, next week's episode is going to be huge. We're going to have a guest on Annalisa Christman. We'll be dropping by again. We're going to be covering Siren. We're going to be having World Trigger to My Heart and Back Door Apart, whatever the number, the fake.
We're on the fourth one.
I know, but I don't know what the actual number is that you put in it yet, because I haven't seen it yet, because you always surprise me with that. And also, just a little detail, we're going to do video, I think.
Yeah, yeah. It might be on video as well.
Maybe, yeah.
So it's going to be a super packed episode.
All right, so if nothing else, tune in to see if things actually go well or if everything goes wrong, because they might.
It very well could. It'd be horrendous. I have good faith in this, though. I think it's going to be as... You know what? In the episode where Ross and Emily are getting married, this, too, will be an episode of Weekly Manga Recap you cannot miss. Even though it happened in a time where there wasn't DVR, and easily you could just watch the episode the next day, you should be there live, because otherwise something bad will happen to your family.
Okay.
There we go. I think I covered that up nicely.
Man, this sucks. Like, 2 years ago, I wouldn't have understood that reference, and I would have been happy.
How do you not love Friends?
I do love Friends.
There you go.
My girlfriend and I watched the whole series together, and yeah, I liked it enough to keep on doing it. So, yeah, but it's just like, oh, I'm kind of ashamed now that I know that. Anyway, but yeah, video is coming to Weekly Manga Recap, and we're going to be trying out for the first time next week, so check it out.
Should be good.
Now, let's get into the recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap, and starting off as we normally do, with Black Clover, page 40, Pursuit Over the Snow, a.k.a. Black Clover Pinup Edition.
I do not quite understand. Like, I get it. It's the notion of, like, well, you know, not for nothing, but I want to attract this audience. But it's so weird, because I guess to this point, Noelle's never really been... Like, she's had a very provocative outfit, but she's never been used as fan service. There's never been, like, upskirt shots or, like, you know, sexualized images of her. It's just a really impractical outfit. But this one is very flagrant. Like, look how hot she is. Which bothers me, because I feel like, because it's in color, I feel like she only has one tit. Because the other one doesn't have any line detail on her body.
So I mean, she's natural.
It
means it's flopping over to the side. So she doesn't have implants. Didn't use any of that royal money in order, or get magic plastic surgery either. So yeah,
she does, but it's a very interesting image, to say the least.
Yeah. So yeah, you got Noelle and Mimosa, and not only does the author, you know, want to be like, oh yeah, this is I can do fan service and attract that young audience. He also realizes that he can nail down a specific fetish, you know, the way that Hero does, where, like, Hero goes after a bunch of different things, but each of the bunch of different things he has aren't just, like, boob shot. It's always some weird fetish now, because he's got to keep it fresh somehow. But, yeah, Tirata, first time up to bat, is just, like, thighs. That is what I'm doing.
He's, like, going to rock the thigh action. Oh, I mean, you look at it, two most impractical outfits of the series, Noelle's and the creepy scientist girl. Both very thigh action heavy outfits.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the scientist girl also has a weird cleavage thing going on.
Yeah.
Okay. So
it's
yeah,
like the most notable thing in the chapter. We're like, and anyway,
well,
bleach.
The rest of it is basically just, well, the kids were kidnapped. They were Pied Pipered, basically. So roughly the first two-thirds are our heroes kind of reacting to this, as Rebecca tells Asta, oh, my little siblings Luca and Marco are gone, and she's very worried about them.
Nick, I just want to let you know, Rebecca will never be an important character, though.
She might not show up next chapter,
she's
but this
never
is
going
straight
to be an important character, Nick. Also, they start like having like parents call out to their kids, and the first one's Urien, and I can't help but feel like that's a reference to Urien Brown from Shonen Jump, because I was like, what a weird name to like have, and like I've never heard of someone called Urien besides Urien from the Shonen Jump podcast. And the second name is Chris, and I'm like, is that a shout out to me? That's a much more common name, probably not. Maybe. I have to hold on hope.
Okay, that's odd.
I'm just noting, nobody says Nick, where have you gone?
Well, no one at Shonen Jump knows who I am. They think that we're the same person.
That's true, they're like Chris and Rolo T.
So Gaush appears, and of course, he is upset that his little sister is gone. Noel appears, and she's like, oh my god, why is it snowing at this time of year? It's so cold. Then put on some fucking pants.
Pants are hard to come by in the magic world, Nick.
Apparently.
If you weren't born with pants magic, then what are you going to do? Nothing. You're just going to have to put up with it.
You've got to be like that one blue jeans superhero from My Hero Academia.
Yeah, if pants aren't your gimmick, you don't get to just have them. Because we're going to find one day a pants gimmick character, and he doesn't want his gimmick to be stepped on. They can't be like WWE where we have two superheroes at the same time. That's ridiculous. Unless they're a stable or a tag team together. Then it's fine.
Although nobody in WWE would have a pants superpower. Seriously, all those men just walk around in underwear and t-shirts all the time.
This is so off topic. I have to believe at one point in time in some federation, someone's gimmick was that he did wear long pants as opposed to everyone else.
Well, the Shield all wear pants. That's like all of them still do. They showed up wearing cargo pants and now they all wear some sort of pants still. So apparently, yeah, it has got to be like some part of your introductory thing has got to be pants. Because otherwise it's like you switch to wearing pants and everyone's like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
It's like, hey. Happened a few times where it's just like Dolph Ziggler comes out, he's wearing pants, and I'm like, what the fuck is he doing not wearing trunks?
You're like, you take those off. You take your pants off right now, Dolph.
Don't do it while swiveling your hips. You're not sexy. Stop wearing eyeliner. You're not Axl Rose. Stop it.
I know you really want to be Shawn Michaels. You're not him, but you really want to be him.
Stop stomping your foot before you do a super kick. You are not Shawn Michaels.
I just want to note, though, this has caused a great solution in the mix. We just need to have Noelle join S.H.I.E.L.D. and then...
Oh.
She could get pants.
I'm just imagining the Shield's entire run, except instead of a 6 foot something former football playing Samoan, it's just little
5 foot
Noel doing a spear to finish all their matches.
Bamo!
Oh! Oh, God. If someone could draw Noel wearing a flak jacket and cargo pants.
Doing the Superman punch.
Boom! Doing, like, the three fists in the middle with Asta and the other one. Whoever they're teaming up with this week.
Yeah, whoever's partner of the week.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Anyway. So, the nuns come out of the church, and they're like, all the children inside the church are gone. And, so, she says, there's a spell going on that I believe controls its targets. It may be limited to children whose magic hasn't developed yet. That's a very specific thing to get from holding an enchanted drop of snow in your hand. So, what the hell are you doing watching kids instead of, like...
She's a former forensic magic expert.
Yeah, actually. maybe that's where that scar came from. Maybe she's like a former magic knight.
Oh.
Actually, you know, I will give credit where credit is due. Because she actually goes along with Gaush and Asta. So these past two chapters, like, this is the first time we've seen this woman. I kind of learned a lot about her really quickly, despite the fact that she hasn't been really the focal point of either of these chapters, because it's been a focus on Gaush and a focus on the kidnapping plot, but it's kind of like, oh, getting a lot of information on her.
So, yeah, no, I dig it.
So, of course, Gaush is very upset that his sister is gone, and he blames her, and he, like, grabs her by the collar and lifts her up into the air, and she's like, why didn't you stop them? Why didn't you help them? And she just says, you know, you really are good for nothing, resorting to violence immediately. Look, if you want to hit me, go ahead. It's not going to bring the children back. And Gaush is like, you're right. But I have to vent this anger! and he tries to punch her, but Asta uses his glimmering eye powers to teleport in front of Gauss's fist, I guess.
At least he took the punch instead of just, like, deflecting it or something like that.
Being a badass by grabbing onto Gauss's arm or something. I know, he just, like, puts his head in the way like a dumbass. So he kind of, like, is like, oh, come on, Mr. Gauss, just calm down a little bit. All right! And he just headbutts him into the fucking ground. Jesus Christ. And he says to him, parroting Figolian, a magic knight should always keep a cool head. And Gauss says, you're right. So I'll kill you calmly. And he gets up, his head is bleeding, looking like a murderer again.
I do like that line.
Yeah. So, basically, they finally get together and like, okay, we gotta get clues. We've gotta find Marie and stuff. And Gauss says, I have Marie carry a magic mirror with her everywhere. If I use the transmission spell that links us to look for the man in the mirror, I'll be able to tell roughly where she is. You fucking stalker. And, Mother Teresa says that she is going to go with them. Sister Teresa, not Mother Teresa.
Would be a much more interesting series. Well, there's basically a Gandhi in One Piece this week, so maybe it'll make sense. Maybe this is just all of the peaceful world leaders coming together through manga.
She's like the Mother Superior of the church, so but yeah, she's Sister Teresa. She says she's going to go with them in order to help find them. So yeah, presumably she's actually got something up her sleeve. Maybe that's why she's not intimidated by Gauss at all. So Rebecca is very upset that her siblings are missing, so Asta chops her on the head and leaves her lying in a broken heap. Seriously, violence with this guy. He promises he's going to bring her siblings back. Gauss and Teresa get ready to fly off on brooms, and Asta, instead of riding alongside one of them, he just is gripping onto Gauss's broom and hanging from it. Like, what the fuck's with this guy? He's got, like, whatever.
Remember, he can't use magic, so he can't fly on a broom himself.
Just sit on it, then. Balance on it.
Well, presumably Gauss won't let him ride on it. Presumably he just grabs
Sister Teresa's.
Well, she's sitting. Where would he sit there, then?
What do you mean?
Where would he sit on Teresa's?
Behind her.
Are you gonna ride bitch to a fucking Mother Teresa? No, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, he'll just hang. You're right, Chris. This is far more dignified a choice.
This is. I can't believe you're riding bitch to a nun. A rumpf.
Noelle wants to go along with them, and Gauss is like, well, you can't fly just like this guy, so just stay here and you know, protect the town in case someone comes along. And Noelle's kind of upset because she has to hang behind with Rebecca, whom she doesn't like. But yeah, it was kind of a, oh, Noelle is there, because she is jealous that Asta's with someone, and she revealed her presence when the kids were kidnapped, and she said, I want to help too. And they're like, no.
I mean, at least I like that someone, right, like, asked to ask, like, why are you here? Like, at least someone addressed
it. She's just like, I was just passing through.
Yeah, she just blows it up pretty quickly, but I do like that at least someone was like, what?
Wait a minute, you weren't here before.
Why did you come here?
Yeah. Why'd you show up in the middle of the night? Yeah. So we cut away to where the kids have been kidnapped and are being kept inside of a cave, and there are a whole bunch of them, presumably like the entire town was emptied out of its children. And there is this girl, creepy girl wearing a scarf, who is like, oh, come on, everyone, let's all get along. Dee-dee-doo. And Marie apparently is the only
one.
Is that
a girl?
Huh? That's, I guess. Is that chest being exposed? I guess it is a guy.
I was gonna say I would put money on that being a guy.
I didn't notice.
I feel like anytime someone's that effeminate, that cannot be a girl. Then, like, well, it's Japan. Effeminate people are always dudes.
I didn't spot the opening in the shirt before, and now I see that like the musculature of the chest is outlined and stuff.
I didn't notice that either. From that look, I was like, nope, too effeminate to be a girl. It's a trap. It's a trick.
It's another Giselle.
It's just Japan being very odd, where it can't have anything super feminine. Has to be a guy. They're there to trick us.
So Marie is apparently the only one not affected by this person's spell. The magic apparently has worn off on her. And so they notice this immediately. It's like, oh, you're a bad girl. You have to be good to stay under my spell. And if you don't, we can't be friends. And Marie, you know, is like, well, if you use your magic to keep people under your control, then you're not actually real friends. And they get her like, oh, a friend would say things like that and just fucking backhand Marie. Child abuse.
There's a lot of violence towards children in this chapter, so I have to think this is Infamous's favorite chapter of the week for that reason alone. A child gets thrown out in the snow at one point.
And we also had two women being assaulted as well. So yeah.
He doesn't like women being assaulted. He just likes women not being in any close proximity to him to steal his semen and then make children out of it. It's very different, Nick. His problem with women could be easily solved by a chastity belt where the key has been melted down into a very small, like, animal shape. Like a small cartoon hippo as hopper. So no one can get in there afterwards.
You could just get a vasectomy.
That's too much work for him. He could buy a chastity belt online with his other $200 worth of astronaut food.
Oh, God. So, after that, the other kidnapper appears, this very weird, creepy guy with weird glasses and lipstick and a rapist pedo stash, and addresses the effeminate one as Nyege.
I just want you to be careful, Nick. You're getting dangerously close. Edward. I'm like, oh! Tried to stop him.
Not going to even bother to try. Let's call him... No, that's not even...
Nige, right? Is it...
I guess it's Nige. Let's just do... Let's stay with the soft G on this one, because that is the safe option. And he says, Nige, don't damage the merchandise! And he's like, I'm sorry, brother. And so apparently, recognizing Marie has, I guess, stronger magic, he says, ah, well, she's going to be the star attraction this time. And with this many of them, we'll make out like bandits. Wait, this kid doesn't have much power. Nige, I told you only to bring in ones with stronger magic. Okay, out you go. He just tosses the kid down a hole.
I fucking love it. He just hurls the kid. And the kid's still, like, fucking, like, brain dead at this point. Like, it's still under the spell. Yeah. So he's just like, okay. He just fucking lays there with smoke coming off of him and shit.
I can't tell if he's, like, tossed him outside of the cave or further into it.
Because I think outside, because there's snow out there. It looks like he throws him into the snow.
I guess it must be, because, like, I think that that's his breath.
Yeah.
I think. Okay. I assume he's outside. Anyhow. So, Nige then walks over to this weird contraption that got set up with this tremendous container in the middle, and there are three broken containers surrounding it. And he says, all right, let's extract that magic. So, presumably they're, I guess, somehow going to harvest these children, and I guess their magic, their mana or something, will take physical form. And apparently they've tried to do this before, and they fucked up, I guess. Why do they have broken containers with them?
Maybe it has failed in the past.
Maybe, because it would be, I don't know, it seems like it's weird if they've got, why would they haul the broken containers around? Otherwise, that means that they've been in this cave for a while. Are there other towns that they've kidnapped kids from?
Yeah, maybe that's their thing. Look, they're traveling a long distance. There could be a lot of towns they've been to.
Well, if they're traveling, why do they have the broken containers, is my point.
No, I'm not saying they could have been there for a long time. I'm saying the Astis groups had to travel a long while. Like, they're having to travel a distance to find them.
Oh, you're saying that they actually...
So maybe they're really far out from that town, and there's just other towns that are close that they've passed.
How far can children walk in a night?
I'm assuming there's some magic carpet they use, or... children can do amazing things, Nick.
This is getting dangerously into the Sailor Moon Super S movie territory, okay? If you're talking about them having to get on transportation after being Pied Pipered so that their magic could be harvested.
I was about to say, if there's more miniskirts in the series, I'd be happy with it, but then I realized Noelle's basically wearing, like, a super miniskirt, so I guess I really don't have a complaint.
That's not a miniskirt, that's a nanoskirt.
It's basically two dish rags on the opposite side. So I guess the series is Sailor Moon.
Hmm?
Yeah, like a series of Sailor Moon. I've realized it now. You can get behind it, right?
If we get into transformation sequences, I may be done with this. All right, that's it.
Fair enough.
Okay, let's move on. Fuck. Let's move on to Bleach. 653. Ethere Suicide, part... Scene 11? 12? 592? I don't know. We start with a flashback to Nanao's mother and Shunsui's brother, apparently with Shunsui's brother being given the hairpin that Nanao had recognized as belonging to her before. And her mother says, you know, hold on to that, and while you're away from me fighting Hollows, knowing you have the same thing will comfort me. And then we get this great panel of a young Shunsui kind of snooping in on this, and he's got this mocking expression on his face, so his brother headbutts him in order to get him to shut up. That's good. But yeah, essentially this is like Shunsui having his memories of their hairpins, and then of course we see that eventually he wound up carrying them around and stuff. So, you know, Nanao recognized them before, Shunsui's remembering them now. Yeah. Nanao...
But what does the bird chicken man remember, Nick? I want his side of the story.
He remembers nothing. Anyway, Nanao has managed to strike a glancing blow against Lilibaro, and light exploded everywhere. Like, energy exploded everywhere from the wound, and it knocks Nanao to the ground. And also, she has been injured by it. She's bleeding from somewhere on her leg. And Nanao is thinking to herself, like, I had no idea that, you know, fighting with a sword would be so terrifying, and I had no idea that being cut would be hurt this bad. I'm in pain, I'm scared, I can't move, and so on and so forth. And just thinking, like, was she literally just a secretary for the 8th Division? Because I understand she's not familiar with fighting, but being, like, getting cut hurts. Did she not ever fight before?
Well,
because she used keto, right? She's a keto expert. Shouldn't she have fought a hollow at some point?
Do they fight hollows?
They fight hollows.
Fight hollows?
Are supposed to fight hollows as part of their duty because, you know...
True for the 13 court guards and, like, their leaders and everything like that?
Well, that was what Rukia did. She was on patrol duty and she, you know, was supposed to do that and stuff. Now, I assume that actually Nanao would not have had that duty because if she has no Zanpakuto, then she cannot purify a hollow. Because that's how you do it. You cut their head with the Zanpakuto and you absolve them of their sins committed as a monster. That was what was established way back at the start of Bleach. So if she doesn't have her own Zanpakuto, she would have never done that. So this entire time, she's just been like, well, I wanted to join the Keto Corps so I could make use of my abilities, but then I wound up in this place instead. And I can't fight because I don't have a Zanpakuto and we're not at war with anyone. So I guess I'll just do all the books. I don't know, it seems like a tremendous waste. God damn it, Shunsui. We thought you were a better leader than Yamamoto. This is a tremendous waste of manpower.
Well, look, he did that under the regime of Yamamoto, though. So you can't blame Shunsui for that.
But he's the one who got her placed in his division.
Yeah, but you have to assume Yamamoto at some point approved a decision. It all... Shit flows upwards in a crisis, Nick.
Oh, God. So, Shunsui now appears behind Nanao, as we saw at the end of the last chapter, and, you know, puts his hand over hers on top of the sword, as now... Basically, Lilibaro has summoned his giant attack globe thing and it's raining destruction on everything around them. And so he observes that Shunsui has rejoined the scene of the battle and is like, if you came out hiding behind your own subordinates, what a bad captain you are. Well, listen to my trompete and die. And he summons a gigantic horn. Just a giant, you know, horn. That I guess is his attack now. So, this guy was a sniper, remember. Not only has he transformed into this weird owl, centaur, bird, chicken, armed thing. His weapon is a giant horn, I guess.
Because his thing is now, like, he was a sniper.
I'm God, this is God's horn.
Yeah, but now he's like a, he's a heavenly thing. That was his whole gimmick that eventually got good. He's like a heavenly dude. So this is like a, his trumpet that he calls into battle with. They hadn't used up until
this
point.
Is this what Kubo thinks angels look like?
I don't ever want to go to his heaven if that's the case, because it is terrifying.
I mean, all of the Sternritter releases and stuff have had a sort of halo, and all of them have had wings, but he is referring to himself as God's messenger. Is this what he thinks a seraphim is? Seraphims were supposed to be terrifying to look at, if I recall any religious knowledge correctly, but I don't know, this is kind of weird. I want this guy to be a Yu-Gi-Oh card. Be part of Counter Angels. Anyhow.
What would his power be?
It would be something related to counter traps.
Mm, look at you. We gotta start working on this.
Well, there was a set a long time ago called Counter Angels. Basically, it was, you know, a set of angels / fairies that had effects that supported being used to, in conjunction with counter traps. Anyway, so Shinsui reassures Nanao and says, you know, I'm here to support you. And Nanao thinks to herself, oh, it's as if the captain's kindness is flowing into me. I came back thinking I will support the captain, but I'm the one who's being supported. The captain has always supported me when I could not stand on my own. So she calms down and gets a very determined look on her face, and they stand together as Zulubaro basically destroys the entire fucking everything around them. Like, the island starts to fucking disappear beneath them under the boom.
And everything starts to crumble, because his attack is that powerful, Nick. What could possibly stop this? He's
Something that reflects God's power, maybe, conveniently. His arm gets cut off by it, too, by the way. So take a shot there. His arm got cut off twice in this one fight. The same arm got cut off twice.
To be fair, it seems his arms were always a little disconnected, though. At least there seems to be one shot where it looks like his arms
aren't connected. Yeah, because he has no shoulders, basically. So maybe it actually just hit his body and pushed the arm away. We might not be able to count that.
I'm going to count it, though. Okay. I'm going to count it for you.
All right. So, yeah, basically, the entire ground around Nanao and Shinsui has been destroyed, but Nanao was holding the blade up so that it would reflect the blast back, and Lilibaro has been hit by it, and his body starts to crumble, and he just goes, oh, right, reflects God's power. Oh, you're so sick. And then he blows up.
Oh, you got me.
So, it seems as though this is the end of the battle. I say seems because you never really know with Bleach. I mean, we might go straight into the wrap-up from here. Maybe Lilibaro has a fourth form, but this fight has been going on for quite a while.
God, I would cry.
This fight has been going on for quite a while, so I believe he is actually dead.
I feel it's over. Because what else can you do at this point? Unless Nanao literally goes into her Bankai next, which would be just ridiculous. There's nowhere else for you to really go.
Mm-hmm. It does seem that this is it.
Yeah. What did you think, then, of this fight, Nick? Of Lilibaro versus Shunsui / Nanao?
I am actually happy with what we got. I thought it was quite... It was actually a different approach to the fight for once, you know, someone needing to be bailed out. I like the whole thing where Nanao comes in and is like, I want to help you. For once, and she does, but Shinsui stands there with her until the end, and so it's basically because of Nanao's power and Shinsui's guidance that they managed to win. I think that the backstory was kind of interesting, but overall, it doesn't change the criticism I've had of, you know, a lot of the reasons that we had in Bleach, which is, well, there's the backstory, okay, but that what about the I didn't know anything about Nanao before that backstory, so just like, okay, well, she's got... We don't really know anything about Nanao's personality now because of that. It's like, if there had been more there to start with, this would have been really, really good, I think. Mm-hmm. But because it is Bleach, and that is not how things are done, it's not as good as it could have been. I think that this fight was overall better than the last one we got by a mile, although not nearly as insane. It was okay.
Okay, I can dig it. I think it worked to a certain point. I do completely agree with you that I like that it was a different end or a different approach to a fight than we've seen in the past few. I think it's going to be more memorable to me overall just because it's something different than what Bleach has done in the past. Like, I'm just going to remember because there was an actual character to this fight as opposed to, like, here's some wacky powers kind of thing. And it was nice to see that it wasn't just about here's Shunsui's Bankai, because we haven't revealed it yet, and that's basically all this fight it exists for. It was a nice way to kind of tie the two relationship together and actually show Captain and Lieutenant working together.
It's kind of weird that we start off with Lobaro as this very calm, collected sniper who considered himself like a hunter and stuff. And then he basically just sort of became... He was actually very similar to Pernita by the end of it. It's weird, like, they start off with these very... They each start off with their unique personalities because Pernita had very little personality, but then because he absorbed more information, he got way cocky and arrogant and I am God-ish. He didn't say anything like that, but he started to get arrogant and said he was going to, you know, punish my Yuri and stuff. And then Larabar did the same thing, where he transformed into things like, I am God's messenger, and so on and so forth, and they went into their super huge monstrous forms and all that. It's weird that they ended up at the same point, despite being so very different to start with. Yeah.
Well, I think that just comes to the fact that the...
If Askanagh-Lavar ends up releasing his form and gets all arrogant and I am God-ish, after spending, like, every other appearance of his running away, basically.
Yeah, I can imagine that'd be pretty annoying. But, expect it, Nick. I feel like all of them, because we also have Garrard to get through, too, or Gerald, whatever the knight's name, or the fucking Thor's name is. We're starting to get through him, too, and I feel like all of these characters are going to end up kind of being the same way.
Here's my one-winged angel form. Who?
Yeah, like, I eventually become this crazy weirdo who spouts about how awesome Yuubak is, and fuck you, basically.
Right. Oh, that does it for that. Let's move on to Buddy Strike. This will be very fast. So, they have that showdown with the Super Ace Slugger of the Super Ace team, and Pitcher Guy is finally assured that he can actually trust in Catcher Guy, and so he throws with all his might.
You've just reached the point where you're like, fuck, remember their names as soon as you're running.
He tried to throw it really hard, and Super Slugger Guy was like, don't take me lightly, and he hit the ball, but Pitcher Guy managed to instinctively snatch it out of the air, so they actually technically won their confrontation, which sets up the super rivalry between them. And they decide that the catcher and pitcher decide to form a battery, but oh no, they have to decide what high school they're going to actually attend. Meanwhile, batter guy is like, I will, you know, just totally defeat them. But it turns out he's kind of not very smart, and so he doesn't actually know what their names are, which is kind of different for a rival character that they're basically a ditz. So I like that at least, but I don't know, I thought that this third chapter was very generic for a sports manga, and did not really care for it.
I actually kind of liked it, if only because it seemed to progress things forward. Like, it wasn't just it was kind of a repeat of the first chapter, but I liked that it built up a rival, and at the end of it posed the question of, like, what school they go to, if only because I'm like, well, maybe that, like, puts interesting dynamic into things. Like, what if these guys... I mean, I guess they can't not, but I was like, what if they don't go to the same school, or, like, you know, well, what if... it seems like it could add an interesting element, or at least see where it's going, but...
Well, if it had focused on those things more, I think I would have liked it more, but it really just seems like we have to solidify the thing that should have been solidified last chapter, you know? And so, just like, okay, we're finally at that point now, and whatever. It took too long to get to that point for me, because it feels like the three chapters have been the same thing, and they finally wrapped it up, and it's just like, this should have happened last chapter.
Nah, and I can completely understand that. I still enjoyed it to a certain extent, but it also is a little bit hampered because it definitely doesn't seem like this is going to be a series that sticks around in the magazine, at least not in the U.S. Jump. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like enjoying it, but knowing it's going to go away immediately thereafter. Although, if you like it, I strongly encourage you to make sure that you vote for the series in the poll, and the Jump poll from shonenjump.com, and it's under, I think it's like issue/survey or something like that. But you can take the survey there, and they have a question on there to just rate how you've enjoyed Buddy Strike, and that goes a long way towards helping that kind of series and all the Jump Starts stay around. So make sure you put your vote in if you want to keep it around. All right. We'll move on to Le Fairy Tale.
Not to be outdone by the other Magical Adventure series.
Yeah.
Pole Dancing Cover!
Chapter 464, Natsu vs. Zeref. The cover is one of the girls from the series whose names I don't care to remember because she's just a pair of tits and ass that satisfied some fetish that I've forgotten about since then. Anyway, last time, Natsu showed up, challenged Zeref, was ready to reveal whatever his secret arm technique thingamabobber is going to be, and this time, he does just that. The lieutenant guy basically talks about how he's like, oh yes, he calls him Zeref the Black Wizard, and perhaps that is in fact his true name. And then basically everyone's kind of like, alright, you know, Lancer's like, you know, Happy, get away from here. And Zeref's like, you should take the troops to the east, so they, well, a kilometer away, because it's going to get dangerous here. And Natsu unwraps his arm and reveals a very crazy looking dragon tattoo beneath his fairy tale mark. And, Zeref notes, he's like, what is this magical power, this heat? And Natsu punches him, and his fist shoots fire, and it's, you know, not all that surprising. We've known he's done that before. But Zeref throws a, like, kind of void ball. I don't know exactly what element it's supposed to be. I assume it's just black magic, quote-unquote. But Natsu throws up his hand and burns the magic away. He literally burned the magic itself, which I don't quite understand the mechanics to.
No, I don't really care. It's awesome.
And Natsu flies forward, punches him in the face, sends him flying. There's a bunch of the big sound effects. There's a sound effect that's not Doom for once. There's Gwog.
Gwog.
But then Doom comes in the next page. as Natsu punches him in the face, and there's a basically a big kind of like two, not two page spread, but there's like two panels worth of basically the two of them kind of just slugging it out with one another. You know, Happy's cheering on from side.
We mean with one another. It's Natsu punching Zeref over and over again.
No, as Natsu gets a blasted in the face too.
He gets like one hit in? I think that's it.
Well, there's one panel of Natsu doing a whole bunch of gwam, 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 and you can't really see what's happening there. I guess you have to assume that Zeref's getting hit by all of them, but Zeref gets up and blasts him in the face. And there's a whole bunch of bams at the bottom. You have to assume there's some back and forth going on, I think. But Zeref's like, I'm surprised. What is this power of yours? And Natsu's like, I got it from Ignil. It's the last of his power. He left it inside my body. It took me more than 10 months to be able to release it. But once this power is used up, it's gone for good. It was Ignil's resolve. And Zeref starts, like, getting a hard-on. Because he's like, ooh, this might be enough to destroy an immortal. Ooh! And Natsu activates Fire Dragon King Mode! God, this series is the dorkiest name attacks. And the very earth itself is burning underneath Natsu's intense magical fire. And Zeref is stunned. He never thought his wish would be granted here. Thank you, Ignil. And he starts naming all these different people that also helped in his journey to this point. Anna, Layla, who I don't know and I guess are part of that other series. Mavis.
Wasn't that Lucy's mother's name?
It could be. I don't pay enough attention to the name of that character. Is it Lucy's mom? All right, then I guess that's a pretty big deal.
That's kind of an important detail then, because, you know, Brandish hinted that she knew Lucy's mother, and she's part of, you know, part of Zeref's army, so.
Fair enough, and he finishes it off by saying, and thank you to the one I love best, my dear brother, Natsu. And there's not really, you don't see a contact. You see Natsu punching and what looks like a bunch of light kind of escaping. And it just says, to be continued in chapter 400 years. So, an interesting little development there that Natsu revealed his power-up. We found out what it is. It was Ignil's last remaining strength that he was going to use to beat him. Even Zeref himself thinks that this is the end.
I mean, it totally isn't, obviously. But, I mean, I thought it was even, you know, unfortunately, like, I feel like this could have been more effective, you know, if there were an actual reason to think maybe Natsu, maybe he pulled it off. But you know he didn't.
No. Yeah, maybe if this were a little bit further into it,
mm-hmm.
it might.
Like after a few more members of the 12 had fallen and so on and so forth.
Yeah. But
I think on its own, though, I mean, it was pretty satisfying to see Natsu just go, this is the last of my father's power and I'm going to punch you with it! Boom! And Zeref's like, oh, I get to die.
I do like him just being super excited the whole time. Finally, I get to die.
Ooh. Vegas is there for me.
I enjoyed certain aspects of it. I can see the fun of Natsu, like, kind of beating him up. I don't know. There's just something about Natsu's fighting style just lacks a visual impact, I guess, to it. That just kind of gets a little bit boring at times, but it was still exciting. It was still kind of dumb, but that's kind of what you want out of shonen, so it was fine.
I would say, I mean, that's a really short chapter, actually, because it was just Natsu punching Seraph, basically, over and over again.
Yeah.
All right, that's it. Let's move on to Food Wars, Shukyuki no Soma, chapter 145, True Gourmet. So, last time we got to see Aizon show off his cooking prowess. He used all parts of the chicken, Chris. He made chicken stock from the chicken he was cooking.
Yes, Nick, I read your dissertation on this. It was actually pretty good. You really had some insightful points about why this is so silly. I didn't think you could go on for 48 pages, but you did. It was very impressive.
Yeah, well, most of it just means actually just going into how much I hate Bleach, which has nothing to do with this subject.
Yeah, I thought that you kind of lost the audience a little bit there.
I feel as if this really took away from your point. it's like, do you not realize how hard it is to write a dissertation? You just have to bullshit so much. Anyway, we see actually a bit of focus on what Soma's doing with his pot stickers. And so they're like, with standard pot stickers, the filling is enclosed in a wheat dough wrapper. But with these, the filling is stuffed into a chicken wing. So, yeah, they're chicken wing pot stickers. That's an interesting concept. It's weird. And, yeah, so someone's like, yeah, you know, I moved the two leg bones. I do this and this in order to prepare them and so on and so forth. And Rindo's getting super excited as Soma explains what he's doing. And he's like, okay, yeah, sure, I can do that. And then one of the judges is like, how puerile. That slop is barely Big Red Gourmet at best. We don't even have to taste it to know that it's inferior.
What a sound they make are interesting. I'm shocked he managed to make it to the top of the business world with a voice like that.
No one would take you seriously in business meetings if you did that.
You're like, our fourth quarter projection numbers are quite down. We're really going to need to pump up advertising, won't we?
God, shut up. You sound so annoying. No, seriously, you guys. We're going to go out of business if we don't pull ourselves out of the gutter here.
Security, get Snagglepuss out of here.
No, exit stage left, even.
That was whinier than Snagglepuss. All right, so... The guy says, oh, you're so incompetent. You've ruined the Sasum the Chidori. Look at how you use the pork jowl. You combining a high-grade meat with lower-grade meat. Oh, you've ruined it. And Rindo Kobayashi, you're one of the founding members of Central. How can you be so excited? Want to waste your time on an inferior dish? But... I think that this part is actually way better, where Aizon just comes up behind some and goes to the stove he's on, and he's like, this is all your cooking is. Just sit down already. Cooking those is a waste of gas. And he just turns the stove off.
Isn't that, like, is there no cheating in,
Look at who the judges are. They're not going to call him on it.
I guess, to be fair. And it's not, like, really, like, it's not like he's cheating, but it's like, shouldn't this be, like, one of those things in WWE? Like, technically, his own manager hit him with the belt. That's disqualification. Like, it happens.
Right. But that is seriously, like, the fucking height of arrogance. Just coming over, like, come on, you're wasting everybody's time. You're just, like, takes, like, the cooking tools away and just starts cleaning up his station. No, you should just go home. Stop it. Embarrassing yourself. That's a dick move. Kind of gets Soma out of the way, and actually, interestingly, Soma is like looking down at his pot stickers as they sizzle on the pan. I'm not sure exactly what that look is supposed to mean, if he's just like upset at what Aizon's done, or if he's just kind of observing his dish or what. But I don't know, it's just something that kind of catches my attention because there's, you know, a little bit of focus on that after what Aizon's done.
I get interested, and I think it kind of plays into what we're maybe going to get as the conclusion of this, is that Aizon, for as much as he seems to be about the bottom line, has pride,
mm-hmm.
and Soma's noticing that. Like, when challenged, he actually did make a really good dish, and I think that's, you know, kind of to get a jump ahead to the end of this. I think that's what Soma's going to use to force an actual decision in this contest.
Right. Maybe Aizon has to know for certain that his food is better than Soma's.
Yeah.
someone's going to push him to, like, actually...
I don't think he's going to push him. I think he just taunted him right there at the end of the chapter, basically. And it's going to be Azon taking his, you know, saying, like, I have my pride as a chef that I'm better. And whether or not he is or not, that's what's going to force a decision out of this.
Right. And it's a matter of, you know, being arrogant enough to want that final satisfaction as opposed to, no, I don't have to know, you know? Because, I know in my heart that I'm a better chef than you. I don't need to prove it in a Shokugeki. So, this Shokugeki, which was a sham from the start, guess what? I won. Fuck you. Boop. But yeah, I mean, someone has been kind of taunting him to get to this point for a while now already, just by being stubborn enough to accept his challenge despite everything, telling him, hey, if you got something to say to me, then put it on a plate, in order to actually get him to put his all into cooking, as opposed to just putting, you know, any old thing up for the judges to taste, and so on and so forth. So Azon presents his dish, and he introduced it as Hainanese chicken rice. Basically, you know, a breakdown of the process, you know, the entire chicken steeped in broth and so on and so forth. There's a bit of background that it used to be a Chinese dish and so on, and the judges are super excited in order to taste it. And Azon has even prepared a portion for Soma to eat, and he's like, okay, yeah, I'll eat it. And the judges and Soma all eat it, and of course, this being Shokugeki no Soma, their clothes burst up! And it's so good. Oh, it's so wonderful. And the judges are freaking out. Oh, umami and tender meat and there's subtle and sophisticated aftertaste. I'm juicing my pants because of my food. And Azon has also prepared dipping sauces, 3 different dipping sauces to go along with them, so they get to have, you know, additional taste with, you know, so you get to have the original dish, and then you get to have the 3, you know, dipping sauces after that, and oh, it's so good, blah, blah, blah. Oh, he really
is. I'm the one dude here who'd be like, okay, chili sauce, ginger sauce, what, no honey mustard? They're like, get the fuck out of here.
You cannot have chicken without honey mustard if you're going to have dipping sauces.
I'm like, honey mustard is so delicious, and it barely has any calories. Come on, what are you doing?
I mean, like, you can use it as a dressing on your salad, but if you use it with meat, it's so delicious. Come on, what the fuck's wrong with you?
It goes on just about everything. It's ranch for the people who know how to watch calories. They're like, get out of here. You brought in your stupid Pop-Tart bullshit from last week as a dessert. Your friend did, rather. And you come in here with honey mustard. Every goddamn Shokugeki you judged needed more honey mustard.
This is like gonna
even be, the ice cream one.
This is like gonna be our, like, our Shokugeki no Soma, like, cooking titles. I'm like the patron of Pop-Tarts. And you're...
I'm Mr. Needs More Honey Mustard.
It's like a cool sounding one.
It's not.
It's like, that's your demand for everyone needs more honey mustard, so that's what they call you.
Like, it's like the Avatar shot of me when they do, like, the cool picture of me, like the Alchemist one. It's just a shot of me with, like, a pork
like pointing pot. At a dish of food.
Like a really good looking pot roast, like with a sour, like I have like the Kermit the Frog face when you just have, like, when he's frowning and it's just like that straight down V, upside down V, like like I needs more honey mustard. And you're the only thing different about myself is I have a pork pie hat that just has a sign hanging out that says honey mustard, please.
You're like doing that, the thing where, like, you rub your thumb against your fingertips, like, you know, when you're dipping.
Yeah, I'm like, but instead
you're demanding honey mustard.
This school can produce a lot of things, can't produce a good honey mustard, you know what I'm saying? They're like, for the 4th straight Shokugeki week in a row, honey mustard is the theme. Who did you bribe to get to become dean? Oh, I sucked a lot of dick. Anyway, where's that honey mustard?
Whose dick do I have to suck to get some honey mustard?
You know, I sucked all those dicks, put honey mustard on them, didn't taste a thing.
Soon enough, Chris's title becomes Mr. Whose Dick Do I Need to Suck to Get Some Honey Mustard
around. Eventually, like, that's so long. Anyway, your new nickname's Mr. Dick Sucker. I'm like, I don't like the way this is going.
This is not very dignifying. They're like, you don't deserve it.
I'm like, look, I sucked a few dicks to get where I am, and suddenly people label you by it. You
suck 1 dozen people's dicks to get honey mustard.
You suck 1 menagerie worth of cocks, and suddenly people think that's your thing. It's, you know, publicly announcing it.
This has gone on far too long. Rinda, of course, demands to try some of Azon's food. Not just demands, She goes, "Ooh, let me try," and we get a yoink sound effect. She just swipes one of the judge's dishes, and she just—I can't really tell exactly what she does. It seems as though she puts the entire plate in her mouth briefly.
Yeah, I think so.
That's not what she does. They have.
Oh, there is a spoon. Yeah.
Yeah, they have like soup bowl things. So I assume that's what she's taking. But she has a very interesting reaction. Her clothes don't burst off, which implies that her reaction is not as ridiculous as all of theirs. Although she does have a sexy lip-licking moment on a two-page spread.
Well, don't forget, she also has fangs, because she's a vampire girl, somehow.
But I think this is actually very interesting, because she's not freaking out about it. And she just goes, not bad. Oh, you can't expect anything less from the alchemist, which means, okay, good job, Bazon.
Well, remember, her thing is that she eats everything. You know, right. She didn't compete in the festival. She instead went around and sampled everything. So I almost wonder if it's almost a little bit like an inverse of Erina, where Erina has the ability to just tell if something's good or not. She can kind of dissect everything that makes up a food with her tongue. But this girl has maybe a similar high standard, only because she's eaten so many different things that she's just very hard to impress now.
Right. She'll eat anything, but it takes a lot to impress her. And it's really interesting, but it is interesting because she was really excited about Azon's dish.
She doesn't seem disappointed.
She doesn't seem impressed, basically.
But maybe that's her thing. I'll be curious to see what happens when she tries Soma's dish. Right. If you get a different reaction, her clothes do blow off, or if it's a similar kind of reaction, what is that tier of food that makes her clothes blow off?
You just finally get Tosh breaking down, just suddenly drawing a random hentai scene in the middle of it. That's how good it tastes.
Yeah.
Oh, God, it's like I'm sucking a cock's cock.
Would someone call for Honey Mustard Man? get out of here! Who let you in?
Anyway, one of the judges, points and laughs at Soma, basically. He's like, "Oh, your comic cookie isn't even in the same universe as Gourmet Recognized by Central itself." And Soma's just like, "What? What?
You have to look at the chat."
All right, we haven't started doing video of Wikimaga Recap yet, but someone has done an image meme of Kermit's disappointed V face with the caption, "Needs more honey mustard."
Oh, I love you so much.
Thank you, Infamous. We love you.
You gotta link that to me later.
Yeah. So Soma points down at his pan with his pot stickers in it, and he says, "My dish isn't actually done yet. I haven't finished preparing yet. I've got one more step to go." And Azon says, "Whatever trick you may have is bound to be low end. You tasted my dish. It should be obvious by now just how badly I outclass you." And so one of the judges is just like, "All right, this is a waste. Let's just do the official judgment." And Azon's like, "Yes, this shokugeki is over." And Soma says, "Come on, what's the hurry, you guys? I mean, if you want to be picky, sure. But hey, what's wrong with, you trying a bite, Azon? Or could it be that you're afraid?" And we get this awesome sequence because, Azon has turned around to address the judges, and we get him slowly lowering his arm and turning to look over his shoulder, and then this huge picture of him giving Soma a look. Like, I have said that about him a few times in previous chapters. He gives Soma a look. This is one of the most amazing facial expressions I've seen in this entire series, and there have been some good ones.
I almost would have to wonder if this may be the best reaction face I've ever seen in a series. Like, even in Eru's one-page spread, this, I feel, is definitely at least on the same caliber, like, in the argument for best reaction face, because it's so ridiculous. There's veins popping out of his face everywhere.
Veins going along his jawline, all around his eyes and his forehead. His pupils have shrunken down completely. He looks like a fucking lizard. His lips are accentuated as he's, puckering them out.
His nose is, scrunched up.
Just the most what the fuck did you just say to me face? And he just goes, excuse me? And his, like, word bubble has, like, an ethereal mist of hatred surrounding it.
That's the best way to describe it.
Ethereal mist. That should be a Yu-Gi-Oh card, too. Ethereal mist of hatred. So, Soma says, if you aren't afraid of my cooking, where's the harm in having some? After all you guys have been saying to me, don't you think it's kind of cowardly to run on home without even trying a bite? And so Aizan says, why you? And so it's like, oh, you want to give it a try? Awesome! And he adjusts the stove again, which is kind of curious. I guess maybe he turned it back on after Aizan had turned it off. I'm not sure. But he does click it, and so maybe he's turning it back on, actually?
Yeah, the fire's shooting on.
So yeah, he turns it back on, and he's like, all right, step up, folks, gather around. It's time to show the true face of my dish. He's got a bunch of...
Maybe he's got a bunch of honey mustard?
He might have honey mustard.
How
amazing would that be if the secret to his amazing Aizan beating chicken pot stickers was honey mustard?
Like, he was just like, Aizan, you big fool. For all your money and knowledge, you forgot the most essential part of chicken. Having honey mustard with it. And that's when, like, I think World Trigger that week could have Kitora and Osamu making out, and I'd still be like, that should finally happen! The honey mustard love has been vindicated! My two perfect ships have come together on the same day! Osamu and Kitora and honey mustard and chicken!
Somehow I feel as if the honey mustard is still the more likely thing to happen.
Fuck you.
This was a pretty good chapter. I think it all really does come down to Aizan's amazing reaction to just Soma calling him a coward. You can see, this was what Soma was aiming for, was just pushing him to the point where he would convince Aizan that they needed to have this one actual confrontation. Maybe not a fair fight, but at least get to the point where he could actually, you know, basically he wanted the bell to ring to start the match, at least, as opposed to Aizan just beating him up with a chair for 10 minutes straight and never actually...
Or jumping out of the ring for count out, and he's the title holder, so right. it won't transfer, yeah.
So who knows, I mean, how this will turn out still, but I thought that I like the way that things have unfolded in order for us to get to this point, and I'm excited to see where it goes. You know, now that we actually have a more clear picture of what Soma was trying to do, it seems as though he was kind of winging it the way that he normally does, but I would actually buy if this was his plan, too.
So, I'll be curious to see if that's what he basically says in context to next week.
Once this is all finished up, Rinda's like, oh, you exploit Aizan's, you know, pride in order to get him to do this. And someone's just like, huh? Yeah, I guess I did.
I didn't know what was going to happen.
I would be perfectly willing to believe both explanations. So yeah, that's it for Food Wars. Let's hit My Hero Academia, number 69. Okay. Nothing sexy happens in this chapter.
Yeah, there's no sexy pinup at the front. I mean, there's two female characters, but they're trying on shoes.
It's invisible.
You can't even see one of them.
Yeah, and, I mean, I guess Sashido's legs are prominent in it, but she's dressed, you know, normally. It's not she's not, like, doing anything to laying, yeah, so...
And Ida's got pants on, so he's probably a member of S.H.I.E.L.D., so nothing tantalizing there.
Oh, God! Oh, God.
This super stuffy member of S.H.I.E.L.D. who's just like, gentlemen, we're supposed to come in through the entrance ramp.
I decided we're going to come down from the ice because I'm the architect. Don't you annoy me. Believe that. Guys, what's wrong with you? Come on. We're contracted to the company now.
Gentlemen, yeah, we have contracts we have to uphold. If you want your paycheck, you follow the rules.
Through a table now. No, that's not what tables are for.
The Spanish announcers have enough of a hard time doing their job without you breaking their tables.
We've had enough allegations of racism brought against us. I think that we need to... Oh, no!
Oh, sweet Jesus!
Oh, God. Wrestling. Anyway, so apparently this mall that they're in is Jurassic Park?
Basically, yeah.
What does it say here? Kiyoshi Ward Shopping Mall. Wookiees!
It's definitely a reference to Star Wars and Jurassic Park.
Did Horikoshi, like, see when he was figuring out what he wanted this mall to look like? Was that on the week that the Star Wars and Jurassic World trailers dropped at the same time?
I kind of feel like
that's why he did this.
I think he's just a big fan of American culture and American series, so it's probably just a way for him to combine both of them, basically.
Right.
It'd be like if I directed the next Star Wars movie and somewhere out there I'm like, oh, one of the aliens is rubber and he wears glasses. I'm like, oh, it's, you know, the call to the fact that I love World Trigger and One Piece, but, you know, it's just like a silly thing on the side.
So we see a bit of how Tamura Shigaraki came to find Deku at the mall, basically. He just, you know, wandered in a hoodie, bitching to himself about Stain, essentially. I mean, like, oh, that asshole, oh, bloodlust without conviction is meaningless. Ah, fuck you, hero killer. He spots a few kids in a store trying on masks and playing like hero, and they're like, oh, look at it, it's the hero killer's mask. And Shigaraki's like, and you're also getting sympathy from people who couldn't care less about your ideals. What is this? Why are people drawn to you instead of me? We're doing the same thing. We're both just destroying what we hate. What's the difference between us? And then we flash forward to the present, where he's got his hand wrapped around Deku's throat, and nobody notices. It's actually a really weird and interesting thing. You know, they have this really tense confrontation where Shigaraki is, you know, just like, hey, if my middle finger clasps you, that'll be all five fingers touching your neck, and your throat's gonna start crumbling, and you'll turn to dust. And
did you give him Infamous Planet's voice?
No.
Why is someone saying, why doesn't he sound like Infamous Planet anymore?
Because he's too awesome in this chapter.
That's fun.
So Deku's like, come on, you can't risk that. You know, in a crowd like this, heroes are going to show up and they'll catch you. And Shigaraki's like, yeah, sure they will. But, you know, look at all these people surrounding us. You know, it's not crazy to imagine that someone could, at any given moment, commit an atrocity. So why are they smiling and mingling like this? Because the laws and rules are built on their individual morality, they're convinced that no one would ever do that. And in the time it'd take to catch me, I could probably kill 30 of them, you know? And so Deku's like, okay, when you want to talk about that? And they go sit on a bench somewhere. Again, they're just sitting next to each other. His hand is wrapped around his neck. Are they just like, huh? Well, I guess people have all sorts of fetishes these days.
Well, maybe people are looking at him like, that's kind of strange, but I guess you can't directly see it and think it's, like, insidious. Because it's not actually like he's throttling him, it's just like his hand is around his neck, but not like in a strangulation sense.
Right. And, you know, people do kind of, that could be considered a sort of embrace, you know? But it is weird that, like, nobody's paying a single glance at them. If you saw a guy, a gaunt motherfucker, and an obviously perturbed underage kid in that embrace, you might consider calling the cops.
Well, to be fair, when Uraraka shows up, it doesn't take her long to be like, something's off about this. Maybe the other people just aren't paying very much attention because they're out with families or shopping or things like that.
Maybe the crowd's too thick for them to actually... Yeah,
and the people there might just be kind of vapid people who don't really care.
It's okay.
And say fucking brain dead. Just like, oh my god, shopping! I gotta get so much done today!
So...
I'm a cowboy.
So Shigaraki is like...
There's a cowboy there.
So Shigaraki's like, I hate everyone, and everything, but I really hate the hero killer. And Deku says, I thought you were working together, and he was like, no we're not! He's like, and that guy's stealing all the attention, I unleashed the Nomu and Hosu, but no one's noticing me! Why? You know, he grandstands all that and all that stuff. You know, he's just doing the same thing as me. Why are we different, huh, Midoriya? Why? Tell me. And then we see Uraraka off walking by herself. and she's basically calming herself down after she freaked out and ran away from Deku after remembering that Aoyama had brought up that, oh, you have a crush on him and stuff. And she's like, oh, Aoyama, you're so silly. Okay, yeah, you know, you're just a silly head. Yeah, what a weirdo. I'll go back. There's nothing weird going on here. I'll just go back, and we'll go back to shopping together, and, you know, maybe we don't even need to go shopping together. You know, I'll just go back and apologize for, you know, bailing like a weirdo, and then we'll go back to being friends, and it'll be okay.
I do love, like, it almost feel like there shouldn't be periods. Like, it's just one long, continuous thought for her.
I do like the way that her you know, inner monologue is written, because it's very much, you know, just string of constant stream,
mm-hmm.
stream of consciousness. That's what it's called, type of thing. So Deku considers Shigaraki's question, and he says, "I can't accept what you do, and I don't understand it. And the Hero Killer, I can't accept him either, but I do understand him, because for both me and the Hero Killer, it all started with All Might. You know, back then." He saved him from the Nomu. He actually saved me. So at the very least, he, you know, he may be destructive, but he is doing it for a reason. It's not just for fun. And he remembers, of course, the first confrontation that they had with Shigaraki, where Shigaraki basically bailed when he was like, oh, it's not fun right now. We're going.
Laters.
Yeah. So Deku says, you know, both of you, you know, I don't agree with either of your methods, but I think that the Hero Killer is trying to at least live by ideals. And there's this big panel reaction, like, we don't actually see at first how Shigaraki reacts, we just see this big sound effect, shudder, and I guess he's just twitching in reaction, and it's starting to freak Deku out, which, of course, you know, you would freak out, too, if the guy who would start to kill you if his fingertip touched you was, you know, very close to you, if he's twitching around and stuff, and he's like, oh, I get it now, I get why the Hero Killer pisses me off, and I also get why you piss me off, I get it now, it's all because of All Might. He also pulls a face. His face is a very different sort of face. His face is a scary face.
This is the face you would never want to wake up to, ever.
This is like...
The face I'm going to die. I'm going to see before I die.
I mean, fuck. This...
I assume this is what Satan looks like.
This looks like something that... pardon me, fuck. That Junji Ito would draw, basically.
Hmm.
His... A mouth is not meant to spread that wide, okay? It's this horrible, like, strained grin, basically. And, of course, you know, Shigaraki was freaky-looking to begin with his shriveled-up face and stuff. And, yeah, he just gives Deku this creepy look on a full-page spread. It's such a creepy image. And he's like, all right here, I get it now. What was I so hung up on anyway? The reason these fools can smile and live their lives is because All Might's always got that grin on his face. Smiling is it to say there's no one he can't save! And he's, like, tightening his grip on Deku's neck, although he's still not closing his fifth finger. He says, all right, I'm glad we had this chat, Midoriya. Thanks. I'm heading down the right path for me. Stop squirming. Do you want to die? You saying you want some of these fine people to die? Ah, yeah, we're polar opposites, me and the Hero Killer. But I get to make use of your ideals and convictions. They're all stepping stones for me. And that's when Uraraka shows up and sees Deku basically being strangled. And she goes, is that your friend? No, wait, no, it's not. Okay. And then she kind of, I guess, is in shock at what she sees. And she says, can you, like, let him go? And Deku tries to warn her away and tell her to get away, and instead Shigaraki suddenly just releases his grip on Deku's neck, and he says, oh, sorry, didn't realize you came with someone. Well, bye! And you know what's going to happen if you follow me. But before he gets away, Deku manages to cough out, all for one, what's he after? And Uraraka, you know, realizes who it is, which, you know, doesn't have the hand on his face. A little difficult to recognize. Yeah.
Well, to be fair, he says Shigaraki.
Yeah, that's why she realizes who it is. It's purely because Deku says his name.
Yeah.
Shigaraki just says, I don't know. And what you should worry about is meeting me again, because that's when you'll die. And he just disappears into the crowd of people, grinning as he goes, and he's thinking to himself, oh, bloodlust without conviction is meaningless. I have the convictions. I had them from the start, Hero Killer. Nothing's changed. But what I'm going to do now is all connected to that. Create a world without All Might and cause enough destruction to show them all how fragile their justice really is. From this day forward, that's my conviction. It's all about All Might. And he starts to take his hand out of his pocket, like his extra hands and stuff, as back with Deku, Uraraka's like calling for heroes for help and so on and so forth. So yeah, that's the end of the confrontation between Deku and Shigaraki. I really like this chapter. I came away from the last chapter, you know, I was like, oh fuck, I keep on forgetting Shigaraki's name, even though his name gets said all over this chapter. I just kept on forgetting it. This one is just like, I feel like I know him so much better now, and I really like him as a villain much more.
Yeah, it's an interesting sort of look at him, and I like he, it's a chapter basically just give them focus, and the art's just incredible. I mean, I don't know if this would be as compelling if it weren't for the fact that Horikoshi is just incredibly skilled at it. It's tough, because I want to be able to say, like, he's the best in Jump, but Jump, at this point, has so many really good artists in it.
Yeah.
It's tough to really say he's the best, but it's ethereal. It's an incredibly amazing skill, and it does make Shigaraki so much more exciting to see when the two finally kind of square off or meet again, what's going to kind of happen.
It's sort of weird, because it's almost like, because this makes very clear, although Shigaraki is basically the leader of their little group, we know, of course, that he answers to All for One. And I like that, you know, we've got this, you know, rivalry between One for All and All for One, so All Might and All for One, but then their apprentices essentially also have a rivalry between each other being built up. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, good stuff all around. And all it was just, you know, two guys sitting next to each other talking. While Shigaraki threatened to kill Deku, but you know. All right, let's move on to One Piece, chapter 808, Duke Dogupine. What a name!
Sweet little cameo from Apple, Carrot, and Onion at the front,
and Kaya, right?
Kaya, yes.
Yeah.
Who is presumably maybe at this point? I think she's already.
She's looking better. She's looking better, isn't she, too?
Yeah. Well, yeah, she became a doctor, I guess, or she was studying to be. I can't remember what happened the last time we, like, got the flash over here. I think she was studying to become a doctor, because it doesn't look like she's become one yet. But I assume
she's carrying a little satchel with her, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Although, for a moment, I was like, how did Nami end up back on Syrup Island?
And why is she wearing more clothes than usual? Oh, God. We get more of the flashback to how the minks were attacked. So last time, we saw a mammoth showing up. And, unexpectedly, it turns out the mammoth is the leader of the group that attacked them.
It's Ancient Zone. That's a pretty big deal. We haven't seen a whole lot of them.
This was a surprise. I thought this was kind of amazing. The head villain that we've seen so far is a giant woolly mammoth. Jack the Drought is his name. He's given this big introduction by this guy wearing sunglasses, sheep's head. And so he says, you know, oh, you know, this is a trusted confidant of Kaido, one of the four emperors of the sea, one of his three closest associates, each of whom is named after a disaster. This is the great Jack the Drought. So, yeah, Captain Jack is a mammoth in this one.
It's interesting. He does note there's three of them named after a disaster, so it's kind of like we're seeing a little bit of Kaido's structure at this mm-hmm. point.
Right.
Kind of interesting that we're going to see and presumably defeat one of them here, because it seems like Jack's still here probably somewhere. We saw a lot of these guys back when we got that one glimpse of Sanji's group.
Mm-hmm.
Way back when. So I'd be kind of curious to see what's the dealio.
Right. So they, of course, demand that Raizo, the ninja, be handed over to them. And so suddenly, basically their elder approaches, and he says, we don't want to fight you, but we're not going to find a solution to this problem if you don't listen to us, you know. we're not going to lie to you. We're not going to try and hide anything. Look, just, if you're looking for someone, just, you know, search our homes. And Jack just swings his head around and knocks a bunch of buildings over.
Room.
No talking. I like how he's just like, you know, he just says to one of the other pirates, Gin Rummy, or Gin Rummy. Is it Gin or Gin Rummy? Because I never play that game.
It's Gin Rummy.
Gin Rummy, right? And he says, have we come here to bargain? And they say, no, Master Jack, we came here to see the samurai. And they're like, it's not a samurai. Rise is a ninja. And they're like, samurai is just shorthand for one. We're just looking for... Shut up! Now, we get a couple of groups within the Jack's Animal Kingdom Pirates, as they're called. The Pleasures and the Gifters. No real explanation as to what they are?
Well, the Gifters, you have to assume, might be people with devil fruit powers. Because they all look to have zoan fruits. They all have animal talents to them. The
that
Pleasures,
is true.
I think they're maybe just masochists.
Or sadists.
Yeah, sadists, I guess you'd say, yeah.
So, yeah, at first, like, it seems as though, like, the non-powered ones rush forward, but suddenly that just, like, a whole bunch of minks run in, do martial arts attacks, and also electrocute them. You know, lightning kung fu, basically. And they're like, holy shit, even, like, the old people and kids attacked us. And, you know, one of them says, there are no weak members of this herd, because all minks are natural-born fighters. Even our suckling babes have the gift of self-defense. Kung Fu lightning baby animals. What the fuck?
This island really poses some balance issues on my One Piece form.
And they're like, yeah, you know, do you think you can make an enemy of every single last mink on this land? And also the skill of the musketeers to find all the scripture. They've got Kung Fu animal lightning French nobles now. they're like, look, if you actually want to fight us, you're going to take some heavy losses. So, you know, why don't you just speak with the Duke of this land and we can sell this peacefully? And Jack once again just says, no. And the powered members of the crew rush in and, we cut away from that before we actually see the battle break gotten full. As we go to, I've forgotten her name like 5 times now. The dog one.
For some reason, I don't remember. None of these guys have made enough of an impression on me yet to have it really stick. Yeah.
She has been Lady Exposition who licks people so far.
Hmm.
Everyone's freaking out over this because, like, oh, yeah, our peaceful...
Wanda. Why can't I remember Wanda?
It's such a simple name, too, yeah. And, you know, Usopp is freaking out. Just, oh, followers of Emperor, so Kaido attacked this place, and so on and so forth. And they don't know where the samurai is, and so on. And, you know, all the Straw Hats are listening intently. The movie just goes, you hear that, Usopp? A mammoth!
That's super cool.
And, you know, later on, everyone's like, okay, yeah, we get this. And then, and so Levi says, huh, so that ninja that Kinemon was talking about isn't here, I guess. Okay. They're just, Nami and Brook and Usopp all freak out, and everyone's like, oh, what's that ninja? You mean a warrior of Wano? As Usopp and Brook and Nami are all curb stomping Luffy to get him to shut up. And next time he shows up, he's got all these lumps on his face, it's all swollen. And they're like, so you say, did you say ninja? And Usopp says, he said injured. He was asking about the state of the injured. Good save, Usopp.
Nailed it.
Brook, I'm sorry. Oh, God. So, but upon hearing that one, it's like, oh yeah, the Duke's sanatorium is just up ahead, so we'll go check on him. And they go up ahead to Duke Doggypine's sanatorium, but when they arrive, they see Sir Shishilian is beating up some youngsters, and Shishilian turns around. He looks very much like
Absalom.
He does look a lot like Absalom.
Well, just the fact that he's also a lion man, which is kind of what Absalom was.
I mean, obviously he is, you know, not the same as Absalom. Absalom took a devil fruit in order to do it, but yeah.
Well, actually, no. He was just surgically made to look like a lion.
Right, you're right. Because
He had the invisibility fruit.
Yeah, of course. How could I forget that?
Huda just really likes animals.
How could I forget about that? That was
found three different ways to make animal people in the series.
That was the entire crux of his rivalry with Sanji, was that Sanji wanted that. So he could use it the exact same way that Absalom used it. Oh, God. So, yeah, that guy, he's introduced, we get a caption that says he is one of the three Doggypine Musketeers, captain of the Storm Dog Musketeers, a lion mink. He looks really badass, by the way. I love how he looks. He's got his, because, you know, his mane is styled into this awesome beard and stuff, and he's dressed like a musketeer and everything.
His name, though, is the most ridiculous thing ever, because in verbatim, it's one of the three Dogpine Musketeers, captain of the Storm Dog Musketeers, lion mink, full power, Shishilian.
Full power is an awesome title for someone. Shishilian is a weird name.
He's like one fucking title away from being like a character in Game of Thrones.
Exactly.
Like for like the first of the descendant of the first man, queen of the Andals, the unburnt.
Freer of slaves, mother of dragons.
I'm like, holy shit, I get it, Shishilian, you're a big deal.
And he basically just has this whole speech about how the people he was just beating up are talking to him about kindness and love, romance, babies, sugar and honey. Never speak of such things around me unless they're full of salt. Oh, God. And Wanda introduces the Straw Hats, and he jumps up in the air so that he can land in a prostrated position and thank them for saving their country and stuff. And so Chopper greets all the Straw Hats and stuff as he's, you know, been tending to Duke Doggypine, who is this huge ass fucking dog, a man. Because we see Wanda come up to hug him, and like, she is tiny in comparison to him. He's not like giant sized or anything, but he is a large dog man. So, yeah. Luffy, you know, greets them and says,
holy
yeah.
shit, I don't know why I didn't notice it. I didn't pay attention to that one panel where you could see Wanda next to him. Holy fuck.
Yeah. And she gets a glomp in on him, yeah. So Luffy says, oh yeah, I haven't heard the details about it, but apparently my friends helped you guys out and stuff. And Doggypine says, actually, it was thanks to you too, Straw Hat Luffy. And Luffy, I guess, is kind of ignoring because he's just like, I bet you're pretty tough! He's like, sizing him up for a fight!
I bet I can fight you!
And Wanda's actually, he was like, his grace is the greatest fighter in our land! But Doggypine, you know, is like, oh, you know, I lost the fight, though. You know, don't compliment me. And Wanda's getting all indignant about it. It's like, no, the enemy was troublesome, but you held the advantage. If only Jack hadn't brought that weapon into our land. And Chopper says, yes, the thing that destroyed this dukedom was one of Caesar's gas weapons. Which I guess isn't actually all that surprising, considering that Caesar Clown and Kaido had a deal going on. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. But I thought that, you know, as we continue on, you know, introducing characters to be involved in this arc and, you know, getting the explanation of what went down and stuff, in between there was quite a bit that entertained me in this chapter, even if overall not a whole lot happened, but I was entertained throughout.
So. It was still fun, which yes. I guess is what I kind of enjoyed the most part of it.
Yes.
Good chapter.
All right, let's move on to Toriko, Gourmet 349. Memories.
Like the okay. corners of my
I was kind of just thinking that you were going to just leave it there and not address it.
I'm like, Nick, what the fuck are you doing?
Just awkwardly go into talking about the chapter.
I'm like, anyway, so what happened this week? Since Nick is busy karaokeing over here.
Komatsu and company headed into the spirit world, still doing that flashback. So we see a bunch of, like, I guess, appetites incarnate, I guess. Mm-hmm. A bunch, everyone's appetites emerge when they went in. Some weird designs on a couple of them. In particular, the one in the center bottom of the panel where we see them all, has apparently disembodied hands that are stretching its face apart.
Kind of jacked up.
Yeah. So, Don Slime, now looks down at Komatsu, who's, you know, face is freaking out because his, you know, appetite is doing all weird stuff, and he's like, oh, what's going on? And Don Slime says, that's your appetite incarnate. How cute. You're such a light eater still. in this world, most appetites can't be satisfied so easily. And then you see all the appetites and stuff. We cut briefly outside where Gigi and Rin are tending to everyone's bodies so that they can't be possessed by food spirits. And he explains to Rin that, you know, look, you know, they are all alive, but they have no appetite. And for gourmet cells, appetite is the source of all energy. So you might as well be dead if you don't have an appetite. Okay. And then Komatsu is greeted by the Great King Enma Squid, the Soul Reviver. The guy that Don Slam was talking to a couple chapters ago.
A little bit ago, yeah. About, what's his, Ichiru. Not Ichiru. Was it Ichiru?
I don't know what you're talking about exactly.
He was talking, or he was talking about reviving, yeah, it was Ichiru.
Ichiru, yeah.
Yeah, Don Slime's Ichiru's food demon, basically. Gourmet cell demon.
Other way around, but yes.
Yeah.
So, basically, Komatsu is just kind of, like, drifting in and out. He's not all there because of, it, of the way he's reacting to being in the spirit world as the king basically explains how stuff works in it. And Don Slime is also explaining, you know, how the worlds are connected and so on and so forth. And eventually Komatsu just like, none of the things that he's really saying is sinking in. You and me both, bro. He also sees a pure human soul that the gourmet cells don't possess. Humans' appetites are so weak they can't maintain a physical form. The soul will disappear sooner or later. And even if it does remain, the soul will only have memories of food. The faces of their family members, the voice of their lover, will all be forgotten. Even the person they've been married to for centuries and their own name is the same with us gourmet soul demons. So, yeah. Komatsu briefly recalls what Chako's mother told him, like, you know, about how she still remembered Chako from when she was alive and stuff like that. So Komatsu's like, oh, I'm forgetting everything. Oh, I'm drifting through space. Oh, hey, look, a gourmet cruise ship. And on the gourmet cruise ship, there's all these monsters that are eating together. And
look how, like, not impressed by it all. He's like, interesting.
And Kaka's here, except I don't recognize her. And, oh, hey, what's over here? What's that weird bulging thing? Huh. That's weird. Oh, hey, there's a guy over there worrying about food spirits. Oh, hey, Chio's here, too. Because I guess he's seeing other people and experiencing their own memories as well.
It is actually, I do want to actually note that it is very sweet in a very subtle scene where you see Chio with a very small soul.
Presumably like son.
Presumably is her son.
I think that's like the best part of this chapter because it's just a little thing that, you know, you see it in passing. I wish that there was more from that with some of the other chefs, but because we only
got enough time to learn about her dead kid and Muda murdering someone.
Basically, yeah. And then Komatsu hears someone addressing him from a nearby table, and it's basically like we've seen this scene before.
It was when the Blue Demon came out. There was like a big cafe,
mm-hmm.
but that was the only one that the Blue Demon was the only one who was in there at the time.
And so, basically, it looks like Toriko's demon at first, and he says, you know, to eat with everyone, that's the goal. Isn't that what you came here for? And then he turns his head and he turns into Toriko proper, and he's like, right, Komatsu. And Komatsu immediately snaps out of it, and he starts crying, and he's like, that's right, I'm going to cook another, I'm doing it for everyone! He remembers why he came there, and basically, you know, he overcomes the effects that the spirit was having on him. He greets all of the appetites that have come towards him, holding fish. It's like they're cats presenting him with their kills, basically. And he's like, come on, you appetites, I'll fill your bellies up! And then Don Slime freaks out as he sees, like, ghost whales floating around.
It's okay. Another.
Yeah. Yep.
So he found it. Yay!
Ghost whales!
Good job, Komatsu. You did it.
This is actually probably the best Toriko chapter we've gotten in several weeks, but even still, it's just kind of like, okay.
It's just hampered by the fact that we already know this happens. We're just seeing the process.
Because
we already saw the conclusion. We know they get out of this, they get another, and all of them grow beards.
And I mean, it was nice to have like a coherent thread running for all the way through it, as opposed to jumping around between a lot of scenes, and you're like, okay, let's see this guy who you don't care about do whatever stuff. Yeah. So, yeah. I did enjoy this. This is a really good Wii for manga, I think. I think that there is something to enjoy in basically every single series we cover. So, so yeah, let's finish things off with World Trigger, chapter 123. I hate this name. Gallipola, part 2. So, Osamu leaves Arashiyama Squad's headquarters, and he says, you know, thanks for everything. I gotta, you know, work out a plan with my squad and stuff. Say hi to Arashiyama for me, and so on. Thanks, Kitora. And Kitora says, just thanks. Osamu's like, I love you, please marry me. He doesn't say that. He says, thank you very much, and just kind of awkwardly walks away. And their operator says, oh, I'm glad that Mikomo was able to get something out of this. And Kitora says, yeah, well, he was confused and lost, and now he's just found his way back. And they're like, man, you're always so extra critical of Mikomo. And Kitora just says, when you keep losing, gratuitous kindness will eventually become a burden, especially for someone with his personality.
I love that quote. I love that sentiment. It's something that is very true and just never gets brought up in Jump series generally. Because Jump series, I feel like characters need to do something good. It's kind of like Full Paragon or like Full Light Side if you ever play a video game. It's always like you always have to encourage people. You're always doing, you know, the nicest thing perceived possible. But there are times when there's actually a better approach to doing things that is kind of, that seems like it might be mean, that seems like it's rough. Basically, she's giving him tough love, and he really needs it right now, and I just really, really love seeing a manga actually showcase that.
Sometimes the kindest thing you can do is not the nicest thing. Mm-hmm. Actually, this is going to be really weird for me to bring up, but I read one of the Freezing spin-offs once, and there was, like, in general, it was, like, not very good because Freezing. But there was one part of it that I have to give credit for, which is basically this girl is, you know, basically trying to go through all the training and stuff in order to, you know, join their, like, army and stuff like that. She, like, needs to do it because then they'll, like, pay for her sick younger brother, essentially, his operation, so he will be healthy and stuff. And as she's going through the training, she has to go through, like, this hellish train. Like, she has to, like, run a treadmill for, like, a marathon and stuff like that, like, as a regular thing. And while she's doing this, there's, like, this drill sergeant who is just like, come on, get back up on the fucking treadmill and keep on running. This is not acceptable for how far you are into the program. You need to keep on going. You know, stop, you know, whining. Stop being so soft. This is not, you know, and she just keeps on pushing her really hard, and of course, she, you know, the girl grows to hate her, and occasionally while she's pushing her too hard, like, her superior will come by and be like, you know, back off on her. And so she's like, oh yeah, thank God she came and bailed me out and stuff like that. We find out later, though, is that the superior doesn't actually care if she makes it through the program or not, because they'll be like, okay, she'll just be replaced by someone else, whereas the drill sergeant is like, knows about her situation and actually really wants her to make it through so that, you know, her brother will be taken, looked after and stuff like that. So it's like, you know, she's doing what the girl needs as opposed to what would appear to be the kindest action. And I thought that was actually, you know, credit where credit's due, that was actually a pretty cool element.
Now, how much nudity was in that series?
Actually, not as much as you would think. Ooh. Although, they heavily implied that there was a guy that tried to hit on her while she was having money troubles, basically like, be my prostitute, and she basically was agreeing to sell herself into the company, thinking that she would be a sex slave. Like, it was never explicitly said, but she was approached about it, refused it, because she thought, this is really seedy, they want to basically have me be a sex slave, or a prostitute. So I'm not going to do it. And then, like, it was her last option, so she swallowed her pride and went for it. And it turns out, no, we want you to be a soldier and take on...
That series is so depressing at times.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, but yeah, that one part of it, I was like, okay, that was actually pretty good. And eventually, like, there's this big thing where, like, she manages to finally make it through the programs. One of the other candidates is like, you know, she was actually looking out for you, and finally makes her realize, and they have this, she has this big tearful thank you scene and stuff. So it's like, oh, that's nice. Yeah. And then, of course, like, it turns out that her brother actually had sexually abused her. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm like, oh my god. It's everywhere.
So we go over... Anyway, back to World Trigger. We go over to Yuma, who is still talking with... Kako. And Kako says, like, oh, you see, you know, our squad has all people with the initial Ks. And she points out that their insignia is a butterfly with a K on the wing. And she's like, yeah, you know, everyone's names begin with K. And he was like, oh, I get it. Yuma Kuga. Okay, yeah. And Kako's like, yeah, you know, whenever I see a talented person whose name starts with K, I can't help but reach out for them. And so Yuma's like, so then did you try to recruit Kakizaki too? And Keiko's like, he's not really our type.
And I like how he's like, you don't have to sugarcoat it. Like, you don't have to act like, oh no, that's not the reason he didn't get asked. He's, you know, I don't like blonde guys or whatever hair color you are.
Yeah. So, they kind of talk.
Do you think she asked Kitora to join?
Maybe.
I know. I'm gonna hate Kako for the rest of my life. There are a shit ton of K names.
There are a lot. Well, K is a pretty common name. Common, you know, because it's Ka, K, Ku, you know, lots of names start with that. And if you're counting first and last names, then yeah, that's gonna be a lot of them. Anyhow, so. Kako is still trying to, you know, kind of convince Yuma. He's like, hey, come on, you know, if you want to go on an away mission, you'll be faster if you join us. And Yuma's like, no, we're working towards it. Well, you know, if you join an A-rank team, you'll have the perk of getting to ask the lab to customize your triggers. Yuma's like, well, we're just going to make A-rank on our own, so it's still good.
It's kind of interesting, though, yeah, that you can customize triggers at A-rank. I mean, yeah, I kind of already knew that to a certain extent, but hearing it.
Yeah, having a flat-out confirmed stuff. Mm-hmm. And Kako's kind of teasing him, being like, you know, making this kind of threatening gesture. He's like, I'll have to take you away by force then. And he was like, oh, this is going to be fun. And Kakizaki's like, people are looking at you guys weird. Stop it.
C-Rank's like, what's happening?
And Kagura suddenly arrives on the scene, and the crowd just like parts to allow him through. And he's like, come on, how long are you going to keep me waiting? It looks like they're going to engage in, you know, solo battles. And, you know, Kako greets him, and Kage's like, ah, Zaki, Phantom Hag. What a weird name for someone!
It might be alluding to her particular fighting style, though.
Maybe, yeah.
I have to assume the Phantom part applies into that. Maybe
she uses bagworms really well.
There's some stealth style, something like that. And the Hag part's probably just because she's like one of the three oldest people in Border, basically.
Right.
And that she's not a child still.
So Kagura and Kako start to, like, do a weird little tug of war with Yuma's body, because Kagura wants to spar with him and Kako wants to keep on talking to him. And meanwhile, Kakizaki's just like, stop! He's just a kid! Leave him alone! It's a really weird picture, because
Yuma... She's strangling him, basically.
And Yuma looks like he's enjoying it.
He's very nonplussed about the whole thing. He's like, oh, get the text.
Yeah. Osamu, you know, contacts him. He's like, I gotta get out of here. Osamu speaks with Izumi in Tachikawa Squad's room. And I've forgotten dipshit's name.
That guy? Yeah, I forgot his name, too. Damn. Yeah. Now Issa's gonna be so angry at us next week.
Yeah, he's like, oh, you know, if it's going to be a miracle if you ever get a correct technique in the way you keep on changing what you do. And he's just like, he's just sulking because he can't play with you. And Izumi mentions, oh, I was asked to do the commentary for the next match, so put on a good show, okay? So, yeah.
Super exciting.
It's time for the next rank wars, and we get this very brief little snippet in, touching on Tamakomatsu's other opponents in the match, who...
Katori Squad.
I think it's Katori. Katori Squad.
Is that an O? That was another A. Okay.
It is hard with that font to figure out, but yeah, Katori Squad. And, Katori herself has the weirdest goddamn accessories on her head. I can't tell if they're just hair clips or if they're horns. I guess they're hair clips.
They're hair clips.
but they're very weird hair clips. Big old giant triangular things.
I'm more astonished by how her hair seems to function. Like, she seems to have, like, I guess a particular sheen to it, although from this angle it almost kind of looks like she has, like, sound waves on a computer
through her hair. It looks like it is, like, gleaming. Like,
yeah.
And the way it tapers out at the tips, she must care a lot for her hair.
Yeah.
So, basically, they are on, patrol duty. And they've, you know, beaten up some lower-level neighbors. And so they're like, oh, God, this sucks. You know, we've got, like, this handicap because we had to take care of this before we, you know, into our rank wars. And we get briefly introduced to the members. We got, you know, Katori is an all-rounder. Then there's this weird-looking guy named Miura. He's the attacker. And then Rakura Wakamura! That's an O2. Fuck. Rokura Wakamura.
I'm shocked that wasn't the character name in those fucking pitches.
Rokura Wakamura. Oh. Glasses.
Just so we can get another glasses douche.
Yeah. So they talk brief about it. I was like, okay, you know, let's see here. Kagezaki Squad and Tamakoma's middle schoolers. We haven't lost to Kagezaki Squad in forever, and Tamakoma got pummeled when they went up in ranks. It's gonna be no big deal. Who cares?
We fought Kagezaki Squad a long time ago, and Kaka was trying to recruit Tamakoma Two's ace the other day.
That's your glasses guy voice?
Yeah.
Yeah,
see? Now he's a bangster.
And then we're introduced to another glasses guy. Or I guess it's a glasses girl. I think it's a glasses girl, because...
Yeah, it's a glasses girl. All the operators are female, except for that one, she? Yeah.
Hana Some, who... What the fuck is... She's wearing a tuxedo, basically. Well she's wearing a three-piece suit.
A lot of them wear suits. It's driver's gloves. Yeah, it's the gloves that make her look like she's an assassin who just got stuck in a computer for a little bit.
Or like she's driving Miss Daisy or something. So she's like, come on, guys. We're supposed to be working.
A uniform for operators to wear? Because not all of them do. Like, I don't think Shiori generally wears... She doesn't wear suits, per se. But we've seen a lot of them that seem to wear suits.
I do think that there must be some form of dress code, because they do seem to be dressed nicely.
Which is weird, because they're the ones who are never in the public spotlight.
Right.
Feel like I'd be the one who's like, I can't wear sneakers to work. I just sit at a goddamn computer all fucking day.
Yeah, we haven't seen Arashiyama Squad's operator in any of the fucking press events or anything.
Yeah.
So they wander off, and as they do, a little, it is just called a dog. It's called a dog.
I'm gonna call it Scotia, and it better never die.
It's just a freaking robot, Chris.
It's a robot dog.
It's one of nine, apparently, at least. It crawls out from within the larger neighbor's mouth, and it's introduced as a scout/pack combat Trion soldier. And so it's basically got this camera that's sending a feed to the Galapolis group's feed, essentially. And so they're observing stuff like, okay, well, if they're all like those guys, then this shouldn't be too difficult. And they're like, nah, they're probably just average, and so on and so forth. And one of them announces that the monitoring trigger has been neutralized. So they're like, okay, well, we'll do what we can. It's going to be difficult to be sneaky, and so on and so forth. We'll go when they change shifts. And we'll go when the sun sets. Basically just, you know, making plans. But eventually, to cap off the meeting, their leader says that their target is the Meiden Expedition Ship. Which, of course, makes perfect sense, because that's their way of getting to the neighborhood. So, yeah. And then we cut to Jin, who suddenly freaks out for a moment. And he kind of walks away from a meeting he's having with... Tachikawa and Konami, I think, right?
Yeah, Konami's the other one. Who, I can't understand why she's playing poker, because she's the one who believes everything. So I have to imagine that's some kind of in-joke that they just invite her to take all of her money.
Well, they're not playing poker, they're playing Old Maid.
Are they?
Yeah. Because you can see her trying to extend the Joker up out of her hand really obviously.
I didn't even notice that.
That's a great little... Because that's what she's doing with Tachikawa. You see her struggling with what card to take. And then she tries to present it to the guy who can see the future. And she's got it in her hand.
Play with him! He's like, look, I can always see
and
what happens to
people. And she's being so obvious because she's like, come on, come on, take this card! That's such a great little background joke. I love it. Jin announces as he's getting up, yep, the enemy's coming. And he heads over to Shinoda to say this. And he says, we should go with pattern A for right now. And so Shinoda, basically starts making a dispatch. Tachikawa explains that pattern A means HQ defense. But as Tachikawa heads off, Jin says to Konami, stay with Tachikawa. And she's like, why? It's because I saw a future where he's going to get cut down. This enemy might be more troublesome than we thought, as we flashed outside, as we see a portal emerging.
This is a very good chapter. For a couple of reasons. I mean, I love the beginning part with Kitora. I think it's just a really great scene. I like the kind of playing around the middle there, have a little bit of fun. We get to see the other squad before the actual event starts. But the ending is really exciting because it does pose an interesting threat. I mean, for the longest time, they'd known an attack was coming, but they didn't know any of the details. Like Jin noted before, he's like, I've been looking around to see anybody whose life seemed to be in danger, and it just hasn't happened yet. So he didn't know what they're targeting. Now, they know what they're targeting. They know they're going to attack. Well, they don't know what they're targeting. They know they're attacking right now. He sensed that. But it's just the fact that of anyone in the series, the only people who it's really like crazy to like something's going to happen, it'd be Jin, Tachikawa, and Amo. Because those are the three characters who have been kind of built up as being the top tier of the entire border organization. You know, Jin and Amo were the two Black Trigger users, and Tachikawa has been the number one ranked player on the number one ranked squad, the best attacker, the dude who took down Ilgor himself. Like, noting that there's a scenario that might happen where Tachikawa could get killed really makes this group seem like a threat. Like, it builds them up in a good way that you're like, oh, these aren't just a subgroup of, Afgator who just have to do this mission. Like, these apparently are guys with a very intriguing, possible, amazing player on their side. Like, who could possibly threaten Tachikawa? Like, I'm just kind of interested to see what happens in that.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, fucking off next week.
Yep.
Ashihara's health is...
He'll be okay.
Tachikawa or Ashihara?
Yes.
Okay.
Alright, so, that is gonna do it for Weekly Manga Recap this week. So let's close things out with our series of the week and our weekly MVP. The audience series of the week with an astounding 44.9% of the vote in the chat is My Hero Academia for the second straight week.
There was a vote for Buddy Strike, though. I'm impressed by that.
I cannot believe that.
Someone was like, Fairy Tale. Shit.
No, there was no Fairy Tale votes. There were no Toriko votes. My Hero Academia ran away with it. Food Wars and World Trigger were the closest, but they were both less than half what My Hero Academia got.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, geez. People love My Hero Academia this week. But that is also my series of the week, although it was a bit of a difficult decision for me because I thought that pretty much every chapter this week was good, at the very least, compared to, what we usually get from those, we've gotten lately from chapters of the series we cover. Buddy Strike aside, I liked all of the manga this week, and I basically just came down to me going, comparing every single series in a row to each other. Like, did I like Black Clover or Bleach more? I liked Bleach more. Did I like Bleach more or Fairy Tail more? Did I like it more Food Wars? Did I like my... And I'm just like, I can't actually say I liked anything better than My Hero Academia, so that's my pick.
I went with Food Wars. My Hero Academia was great. World Trigger was fantastic. I liked almost every series this week, but I think of it, honestly, I wasn't sure. I think I was almost going to go with World Trigger going into it, but I think it also helped that I had so much fun talking about Food Wars this week. So that's what I ultimately ended up going with. But Food Wars was really good. I like the way it's going. I think the thing, I guess, that would separate is I think I don't know if I would enjoy My Hero Academia's chapter nearly as much if it weren't for the art, but I think I would still enjoy what we got out of Food Wars, even if the art wasn't as good.
Okay. Weekly MVP, I have to go with Shigaraki from My Hero Academia, because he makes that chapter. I thought about giving it to Aizon a second straight week because he pulled that amazing face. But Shigaraki also had an amazing face, and arguably, in terms of straight character development, he got a lot more than Aizon did. And, I mean, he has some good lines all throughout this chapter. It was just... And like I said, he completely changed my opinion on him as a character. He seems like a much better villain now than he did before I read it.
All right, then. My weekly MVP is Kitora, actually. It's a weird
just
sort of thing.
Just the one line. You
it's
got it.
Really, I love that sentiment being expressed in the manga. And this isn't something that I'm like, the payoff's coming down the line. This was a moment that I just really loved that line and that sentiment. Like, just seeing it in a shonen manga just really impressed me. I love that kind of, weird to say realism, I just like that kind of attitude being presented in a, you know, a series like that. I just think it was great, and I enjoyed it all the way through, and I think it also poses the question of, you know, maybe Kitora herself knows that all too well, you know, maybe there's more to her flashback she has yet to be revealed.
It also goes a long way to, you know, kind of shedding light on why she did eventually bother to help out Osamu. Because, you know, it's just, you know, why was she treating him this way? Why was she looking down him so much and so on and so forth? Like, because that's what he needed, apparently, according to her. So, maybe she did actually care about him. But then again, I mean, she's known the guy for a fair amount of time now. And they did kind of go through a little bit together.
I think she disliked him, I think she legitimately did not like him at the start, but I think she's been impressed by his effort to the point where she doesn't want to see that effort go to waste.
Or at the very least, she considers him like an actual member of Border now.
Yeah.
So.
She can't completely disrespect him, even though she's learned that most of his accomplishments weren't himself, that she's seen enough from him. And I'm sure his efforts during the invasion probably won a couple points.
All right, that'll do it for that. So, everyone, thank you for joining us here on hitbox.tv/RoloT, where we normally record the show Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, although that is subject to change. So be sure to follow us on Twitter to stay updated. You can follow the WMR podcast that's at WMR podcast. There's no the there, sorry. But it's the official Weekly Manga Recap Twitter feed. You can also follow the individual hosts at RoloT and at YRuler of Time. Also, be sure to check out our past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com, and also subscribe to us on iTunes, where you can leave a comment or rating and help us to beat the woodworkers.
Yes, and we did get a review. The woodwork just keeps going. Woodworkers. We did get a review from Full Metal Toaster. It says, need a new series to read? Are you curious what's running in Shonen Jump? How about obscene fanfics? This is for you.
Awesome.
I don't know why this year, like, woodworkers just keeps going on. I don't know if you ever watched Howard Stern show back in the day.
No. Nope.
They used to have a segment called Lisa... I can't remember her last name, but it was like, Lisa Frantic Shits at Work, because she took, like, a dump at work and it was made a joke. And in the, like, it was a news segment, and she'd do the news, but in the very background, very softly, they just keep repeating, Tick Shits at Work, Tick Shits at Work. It would go on their entire fucking bit. She'd be, like, in our third news story, it's still in the background, Tick Shits at Work. I want that to be, like, our thing now. At the end, it's just like, woodworkers.
No.
Stop the woodworkers.
No. All right. Be sure to send us criticism as well as ask questions and make suggestions for future manga for us to read. Send all of those things to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. Special thanks go out to our Patreon Patreon supporters. I guess they're subscribers, technically. Whatever.
They're heroes is what they are, Nick.
Yeah, they're champions. Yeah. Your support allows us to create all sorts of bonus content for you guys to enjoy, like the Q&A episode that we did last night up until my microphone caused troubles. But we kept on going after that. Anyway.
Yeah, it caused some issues. Yeah. Special thanks, by the way, to Paulin Cabrios, Michael Ryder, Justin Weaver, Philip Pham, and Rez for supporting us. Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
It is a huge, huge help.
Yeah. You guys allow the podcast to grow and do stuff like video, which we are like we said, about to do.
That was a milestone. That's that's one we're fulfilling, and we just did the Q&A. That was another one that was a milestone, and we have goals to keep on growing from here. So,
yeah. Special thanks finally go out to all the guys who chip in creatively to help us out. We've got Steve Mann, our title artist. He's in. If you punch in a random string of characters, I think you'll find his art somewhere on the internet, basically. NeuroticFanboy.evenart.com, iDropBoobsAtomo.com, Patreon.com/SteveMann, lots and lots of places. Special thanks as well go out to Felix Dark and the Infamous Planet, which I know he hates when I do that.
You know what you need to do next week? Fuck, you should do it right now. You need to do it, but do it in your Cockney accent impression I should have them do.
I don't have a good Cockney accent.
Oh, you want me to do it? You should check out Infamous Planet's videos of... He posted it up the fucking Kermit the Frog image preemptively. I won't do anything. You sir win this round.
It's your own fucking fault for having it be part of your name originally.
I love that he preemptively had that image prepared.
Oh, God, this is why we need video for the podcast. It's like give Infamous Planet like his own little corner from the bitches.
Oh my God, there's just an Infamous Planet section where
Infamous
just...
Planet feed. That's like a new milestone call.
It'll just be a feed into the display that whenever Infamous has some image he wants to post, it'll go right to there.
Anyway, Infamous Planet and Felix Dark do visual editions of our podcast, which are always awesome. We thank you guys because those are always great. Oh, God. This was a good episode. Fun as hell.
Thank you, everybody. Have a good one. See you next week for the Can't Miss episode of the season. And since WMR doesn't have seasons, in the entire history. And because I'm a grandiose, extravagant, over-hyping person, of podcast history. This is going to be bigger than when Barack Obama was on WTF. It's going to make that look like a fucking joke. Because it's going to be smutty fanfic and video.
Presidential appearance, World Trigger smutfic.
Yeah, World Trigger to my heart and backdoor part 4. What would you rather? I say to only the audience that's inclined to watch our show and never to any other public audience.
Like a whole bunch of conservatives chipping me like, yes, give us the World Trigger fanfic. What's World Trigger, by the way?
As I immediately started to like, wow, he used the P word pretty quickly. I'm like, if penis is offending you, I might be in a lot of trouble.